As Herr Bulsch finished the last lecture of the school year, I sketched one final caricature of him into the margins of my notebook. He had bushy gray hair, and long mutton-chop sideburns framed his jowly face. I enjoyed drawing his exaggerated features, and it helped me endure even the most tedious classes. One day, I drew him as the Kaiser, the next as Napoleon. Today, though, I simply depicted him as an enormous walrus, which was the animal he most closely resembled. He was one of our school's more kindly instructors, known as much for his love of the tales of the Teutonic Knights as for the copious piles of dandruff that collected on his jacket. So sometimes I felt bad about my cruel creations, although not bad enough not to do it. I was just completing the drawing when the bell rang, ending the class and the term. "Please remember to leave your final essay books," Herr Bulsch said, closing the book as he had been reading from. "And enjoy your summer." "Danke, Herr Bulsch," most of the boys replied as we rose, moved to the front of the room, and dropped our essay books into a pile on his desk. I shoved the rest of my books into my rucksack and quickly turned to join the flow of boys exiting the room, anxious for vacation to begin. "Stern," I heard Herr Bulsch call to me. I froze and turned toward him. "Ja, Herr Bulsch," I said. "Stay back a moment." I slowly moved to the front of the room, a lump forming in my throat. Had he finally caught me? I stopped in front of his desk. "I'd like you to help alphabetize the essay books for me." "Of course," I said, exhaling with relief. When I finally walked out of the classroom, all of my friends had gone and the hall was empty and quiet. A door creaked in the distance. Probably just the old building groaning in the wind, I thought, but some instinct set a chill through my body and the small hairs pricked the back of my neck. I moved to the back of the stairwell and picked up the faint sound of whistling. As I descended the stairs, the whistling grew louder until I could discern the guttural melody of the Horst Wessel song, the unofficial anthem of the Nazis. If I hadn't known better, I would have sworn it sounded like a group of nature scouts on a hike in the Bavarian Alps. Then I heard the slap of leather soles hitting the floor in time to the music like an approaching squadron of soldiers. Suddenly, I knew exactly who it was, and I knew they were after me. That's from the opening of the Berlin Boxing Club by Robert Schernau. The time is the middle 30s, the middle 1930s, in Berlin, Germany. Adolf Hitler and his Nazi party are clearly in charge of the German nation by this time. And while World War II is yet far over the visible horizon, already the life of our young protagonist, whom we just met, an assimilated Jewish young man named Karl Stern, finds his life at his public high school increasingly dangerous. As the son of Jewish parents, he and his younger sister are increasingly the subject of taunts, of jeers, and in Carl's case, actual beatdowns by students his teachers feel either powerless to stop or quietly urge on from the front of their classes. Confused, angry, and, yes, scared, Carl is surprised to find that his art gallery-owning father is friends with the number one boxer in Germany of his day, the incredibly powerful and suave and real-life Max Schmeling. The boxer, Carl, and we are told, is a longtime friend of Carl's father, who's been selling German artwork to the boxer Schmeling and his wife Annie since the 1920s. Flabbergasted and desperate for a way out of his physical calamities, Carl seeks the counsel and, more importantly, the expertise of his dad's unexpected friend, the German boxer Max Schmeling. And to his and his father's surprise, the boxing great agrees to help the teen learn how to defend himself in and outside of the ring. As our lengthy yet page-turning novel continues, we watch through Carl's eyes as the bond that develops between the internationally known boxer and the Jewish teen in the midst of Hitler's solidification of power in Germany is not as wild and outrageous as it may at first sound. Realistically told, the story follows the emotional and physical ups and downs of the relationship between the two, between Schmeling, the boxer who becomes long absent from his Berlin home as he travels Europe and indeed the world, taking his craft to rings in New York, to Paris, to Munich, leaving Carl defend himself in the less-than-inviting boxing club the great boxer has established in Berlin and to which he has invited Carl to become a student. But Carl's stubbornness, his hard work, and his desire to catch the eye and the heart of a young German girl who shares his apartment building propel him forward to his first fight under darkened skies against a Nazi brown-shirted opponent. The bout starts inauspiciously as we rejoin our story. The next thing I knew, Carl tells us, I was standing face to face with Strasser in the middle of the ring. The ref ran through the rules, but I didn't hear a thing. My head throbbed with the noise of the crowd. Each voice and clap was a tribal prelude to my certain death. The bell rang. We touched gloves, and my fighting career officially commenced. Almost as soon as the bell clanged, my mind went completely blank. All the basics instantly escaped me, like a helium balloon that a child accidentally lets go of. Poof! It was all gone into the ether. Strasser advanced toward me, and I couldn't even assume my stance. My arms just hung at my sides, and my legs didn't budge. Strasser landed a light punch on my upper arm, and I almost fell over. Laughter rose up from the crowd. He punched me again, and I tumbled backward all the way to the ropes. My corner man screamed, "Get your hands up!" I tried to lift my hands, but Strasser came at me with a quick combination of punches that landed on my stomach and chest. Then he hit me in the jaw in a quick uppercut that sent my head snapping back, and I fell against the ropes. Loud jeers rang out from the audience as they smelled blood. I heard shouts of, "Put him away and knock out this skinny clown and kill the bum." I managed to get my hands up and spent the rest of the round blocking punches, ducking, and retreating. Finally, the bell rang again, bringing a chorus of boos aimed at me. I found my way to the corner. "What the heck are you doing in there?" my corner man balked at me. "You're twice the fighter that kid is." I was so winded and dazed I could barely speak. My stomach churned and felt the bile rising in my throat. Well, things happen in the next few moments to Carl. And by golly, Carl gets himself back up, gets a new sense of himself. And as he tells us, my body started to move with a natural rhythm as I ducked and maneuvered away from his attacks. More boos and catcalls rose up from the crowd. "Come on, let's see a fight." Finally, I saw an opening and attacked with a series of jabs that sent Strasser backward. I could feel the shift in his body as I moved forward. He instantly switched to a self-defensive posture. My eyes met his, and I saw what he had seen in mine before the fight. Fear. I knew he was a fighter who was afraid to get hurt. Carl, of course, goes on to win that first fight, goes home in a quite euphoric state of mind. He had won his first fight after practicing for so long and so hard at the Berlin Boxing Club. And yet, tragedy is soon around the corner. This is Berlin in all of its international city trappings. It's 1920s and even early 30s glory days. As a European center of commerce, of art, of travel, and of entertainment, all of it clearly expressed in the background of every chapter. The ubiquity of radio as the entertainment media of the age, and newspapers as the twice-daily purveyor of news, be it good, bad, or in the case of boxing and other sports, simply timely, is well integrated into the story as well. This is urban European or urban American or urban wherever it is, life as it was 70 years ago. Two, our author Robert Chernow weaves into our story the German capital city's other characteristics of note as well. From the evil incarnate of Hitler and Goebbels, who show up from time to time, to the hardworking and increasingly deadly lives of the working-class Jewish population, the culture of high art and raucous cabaret shows, which allows our author to complete his story by featuring a kindly transvestite character who shines as a real hero on behalf of Carl and his sister by the end of the story. And yes, the siblings going on and sibling rivalries between older brother, younger sister come into play often, and realistically. Carl is a teen on the verge of manhood, his younger sister Hildy still a young girl, but not a naive and innocent one as she may at first appear. Carl's parents are smartly drawn too, with the mother portrayed as a fiercely loving and yet also mentally disturbed woman. The father is a distant but decent World War I veteran whose belief in the multicultural, multidimensional Germany of his youth, despite the increasingly violent warning signs, culminate in our novel with the night of Kristallnacht. Indeed, it is soon after that fantastic win by Karl in the ring, that the Nazi terror against the Jews of Germany leads perilously close to his family's destruction. Our story reaches its climax, you see, with the grand view of November 1938's Kristallnacht, a night-long horror fest when Nazis and Nazi sympathizers swept through German cities, Berlin certainly among them, destroying any home, business, or structure thought to be Jewish. The Night of Shattered Glass is given a fittingly scary series of chapters in Berlin Boxing Club, and the end result is anything but easy to read, as Karl's family is literally torn apart by the end of the novel. Schierenau gives us only a short, tantalizing moment to dream with Karl and his younger sister, that at least for these two children, a better life may loom ahead of them, an ocean away. Yes, this is a young adult, teen-themed novel, but its audience ought not be limited to younger readers, for its themes and its characters will appeal and certainly have something to say to readers of all ages. Interestingly enough, there is a true-life story behind the fiction, as we learn only at the end pages of the story. Of course, if you are yourself a boxing enthusiast, as Karl becomes as our novel progresses, you'll already know this. But our author concludes the book by telling us this. This is a work of fiction set against the backdrop of real historical events. The boxer Max Schmeling did rescue two Jewish boys on Kristallnacht. Though this is not their story, the incident inspired me to explore the history of Schmeling and the Jews of Berlin. Any similarities between the Stern family and the family of the rescued boys are purely consequential. He goes on to tell us that Schmeling really spoke about his heroic actions during Kristallnacht. He and his wife, Annie Ondor, were married for 50 years and had no children. Max Schmeling died on February 2, 2005, just a few months shy of his 100th birthday. This is a marvelous novel, not only for what it tells us about what it might well have been like for a young Jewish teen back at the rise of the Hitler regime, but also for its exploration of boxing, of teens learning how to be adults, and of the ultimate hope that comes from those who did work to at least bring some of the children out of the horror that was to become Nazi Germany. The Berlin Boxing Club by Robert Schierenau. It's available at all of our fine local libraries. Hope you pick it up and give it a read. Certainly available at the West Lafayette Public Library.